I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
What happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare?
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from
Russia
evil.
Announced drills to simulate the use of battlefield nuclear weapons in its war with Ukraine. It followed French talk of sending its own troops to Ukraine and the UK's approval of Ukraine using British weapons to strike inside Russia. A Kremlin statement on the war games said, quote, "We hope that this event will cool down the hotheads in Western capitals."
Meantime, Israeli tanks have seized control of Gaza's vital Rafah border crossing. The move comes despite urgent warnings from close allies, including the United States, against moving into the southern city where millions of civilians have taken refuge. Overnight, Israeli officials rejected a ceasefire proposal that Hamas had put forth late yesterday.
The fury unfolding on college campuses for weeks, trying to interrupt fashion's biggest night. The NYPD saying close to 1,000 pro-Palestinian protesters made their presence felt in Manhattan near last night's famed Met Gala. Officers making several arrests.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
Well, first of all, I don't even think they have the authority to subpoena me, but they need to learn the law.
So, will you appear, yes or no?
I will not appear to anything that is unlawful, and I have not broken the law in any way.
Maybe Donald Trump will go away. Maybe he'll go to jail. Maybe he will die, not to be too morbid, but maybe, I mean, he's not a young man.
We have breaking news. Stormy Daniels is expected to take the stand today in the criminal hush money trial against former President Trump.
Adult film actress Stormy Daniels will testify today.
Stormy Daniels is going to be the day's second witness. The defense is trying to limit the scope of her testimony, saying this is a case about documents and records.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily. We are live from Washington, D.C. Today is May 7th, 2024, Anno Domini. Human Events Daily, folks, I want to tell you, very excited. We're able to have sources inside the courtroom and outside. We're told Stormy Daniels, of course, was walking up to the courtroom bombshell testimony today, although we're told that on her way in, she was confused by the lights and cameras and unfortunately began to undress. Now, the judge, Juan Merchan, his first question for her was this your first time appearing in court? Stormy Daniels replied, no, it wasn't. It was just her first time during the day. Stormy Daniels did have a few questions of her own. She had a few questions of her own. For example, she asked the judge if it was going to be a hung jury. She then also put in a slight request. She said, Judge, is it possible to get one of those gag orders? Now, we know that Alvin Bragg has a lot riding on Stormy Daniels today, but Human Events sources say he's hoping she doesn't blow it in court. You know, one thing that we're told as well, that Stormy Daniels wanted to settle out of court, but the judge, in fact, insisted on a climax. Yes. He really did. Now, during testimony, Stormy Daniels said that she'd started directing when she was 23. She was involved in a number of productions, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, Finding Bliss, and a TV show called Dirt with Courtney Cox. President Trump then cleared his throat. She admitted, well, there may have been a few other productions as well. And reportedly, Stormy Daniels got a little bit confused because at one point she requested to be sentenced to community service because she said, and I quote, she's used to servicing the community for years. Yeah, I'm sure she means by that. And this just in, Human Events Daily sources are telling us this is a bit strange that Stormy Daniels has just asked the judge if he'd like her to point out anyone in the courtroom that she recognized, at which he replied, "No, skip that part, please." You know, this just in, Stormy Daniels asking as well, if Trump is convicted, will he be doing hard time? Hard time. I'm not sure what's going on. Kind of time to be done. But what can I say, folks? What can I say? If anyone can get Alvin Bragg to drop his suit, it's Stormy Daniels. Yes. Now, pounding, we're also told, hold on a second, guys. Hold on. Okay, so this is just almost an incident now. Inside the courtroom, we're told that there's been a loud pounding sound on the courtroom doors, and a short, white-haired man was screaming that he had never had an affair with Stormy Daniels either. Officers went outside to discover what it was, and in fact, it was former Vice President Mike Pence. Yes, Mike Pence made a little cameo appearance. Stay tuned. Really big show today, folks. We've got Senator Mike Lee as well as Human Events columnist Kenny Cody. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
Now that you talk about influencers, these are influencers, and they're friends of mine, Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Promise you guys a really big show today, and we have a really big show. We're honored for the first time on here, Human Events Daily, Senator Mike Lee from the great state of Utah. Senator, it's been a long time coming. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Now, I really have to ask you, this is something that you and I connected on Twitter and, you know, I've been going back and forth, and you were probably, of everyone that's out there in the Senate, you were probably one of the first most outspoken people when it came to the Ukraine war and the United States government, specifically the United States government's involvement in this war. And here's my question. How was it that you came, number one, to your position on it, but number two, what does the Ukraine war funding and the continued funding say about us and say about the nature of the U.S. government more than it even says about the dispute between Ukraine and Russia?
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that decision makers here in Washington, including people from both political parties in both houses of Congress, have made a decision to prefer another country half a world away to our own at a time when our country is being invaded. Now, look, it wasn't long ago when Republicans made a promise that we made to ourselves, to each other, to the American people, to our voters, that before we sent another dollar, another dime, or another penny to Ukraine, we would, at a minimum, ensure that our own borders were secure, that we would pass something that would compel Joe Biden to actually do what he's been resistant to do all along, which is enforce the border and force his hand. Yet, here we are, where we've decided to just go ahead and send, pass a bill that sends nearly $100 billion to other countries, while the security of our own country languishes and our own borders remain unsecured. Now, look, I've warned about the risks of Ukraine becoming the next forever war for the United States. Proxy wars, where the United States of America is concerned, where any world power is concerned, eventually have a high likelihood of becoming hot direct wars, not proxy, but, hot conflicts. With talks of a potential 10-year bilateral security guarantee on terms potentially even more generous than even those currently afforded to NATO members, which Ukraine, of course, is not a NATO member, the Biden administration's goal of long-term entanglement with Ukraine is becoming abundantly and increasingly clear. It's also clear that this is a move to tie the hands of future presidents and of President Trump when he becomes the 47th president of the United States. Look, the idea that such an agreement can even be struck entirely by the incumbent president of the United States is laughable. And it's hugely constitutionally problematic. It's anti-democratic. It's anti-constitutional, you might say. Such an agreement is tantamount almost to a treaty, and therefore must, without question, be submitted to the Senate as a treaty, and that requires a two-thirds supermajority approval to ratify. In the meantime, any attempts to circumvent the Senate in that effort should be met with absolute fierce opposition. But in the meantime, we're stuck with a real problem in that Republicans made a promise starting, in November or December of last year, that we wouldn't be sending more money to Ukraine until we fixed our border, until we tied Joe Biden's hands and made it so he couldn't continue to invite this torrent of invading illegal immigrants to come into our country. And we failed, and it's as though a whole lot of Republicans just forgot about the promise and expect their constituents to forget as well.
And so this is what is so vexing to me and so confusing, I think, to a lot of people out there, is we can see that there isn't an appetite for there's not some massive groundswell in the United States saying, oh, we need to defend the Ukrainian borders. We need to defend the Ukrainian borders. And I don't mean to moralize the situation. I've been there. I've traveled to these areas. What's going on is horrific. But at the same time, the question is, I suppose I should ask it this way, Senator. Who's really benefiting from this conflict? Because it's not clear to me that it's the Ukrainian people.
Yeah. In fact, you could say that the Ukrainian people are being thrown into a deeper and deeper conflict that's going to result in even more death and more suffering among the Ukrainian people. And that those who benefit are American politicians who enjoy a momentary season of praise after they appropriate nearly $100 billion to send to foreign countries. And I suppose the biggest single winner would be the military-industrial complex, which benefits to a very obscenely large degree every time we do something like this. So yeah, they're the winners. It's not at all clear that this is going to make Ukrainians any safer. In fact, insofar as you perpetuate a war beyond the season when the incumbent country can afford or can muster the willpower to do it, for keeping the war itself on life support first $113 billion and now an additional $60 to $61 billion going to Ukraine, then that's going to prolong the war. But what I'm not hearing from anyone, not from the Biden administration, not from any of the pro-Ukraine hawks in the House or in the Senate in either party, is a plan for peace, is a plan for how we translate the obscene amounts of money that we've been sending to Ukraine already, that we're about to send to Ukraine now under the new legislation, how that translates into the achievement of peace. It's nowhere to be heard, because I think that's not on their minds at all. This is about prolonging a war.
That's right. And at the same time, we have this other conflict that's kicked off now with Israel-Gaza. And one of the first things that you hear, the media is constantly beating the drum, ceasefire, 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 ceasefire. We need to come to agreement. We need the hostage crisis to end. The hostages need to come over and the bombing, et cetera. Okay, you know, set that aside. Why is it that you never hear those calls, those very same calls from the same people when it comes to Ukraine? We never hear anything about a peace deal. We never hear anything about an armistice. We don't even hear about some of these basics like a ceasefire. They just had Orthodox Easter last weekend. There were no calls for even an Easter ceasefire again this year. I think they had tried a couple of years in the past, but it didn't go so well. And you hear nothing like this from anyone within the United States. And I feel like sometimes I've got whiplash because you hear someone talking from one end and, oh, we have to minimize and slow this down and get to an end of the Israel-Gaza conflict. And then when it comes to Ukraine, it's we need to increase this. We need to expand this. What can we do to get more money over there, more bombs? And, of course, we hear again and again this talk about potential NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine.
Yeah, NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine. You continue to hear from some of my colleagues calls to treat Ukraine as if it were a NATO ally, calls from others that we formally bring Ukraine into NATO. Look, there is a reason that Ukraine has never been brought into NATO. It fails to meet a number of the criteria that have long been established for purposes of bringing in a new NATO ally. And there are a lot of reasons why we should never do that right now. I mean, when you think about it, bringing Ukraine either formally or as a practical policy choice matter into NATO, what that would trigger an Article 5 NATO obligation for us to go to war with Russia. That would be tantamount from our standpoint, one step away from a declaration of war by the United States against Russia. And we're not ready to do that. The American people were never told this by those who are constantly speaking of Ukraine as if it must be treated as a NATO ally, and certainly not by those who are formally calling for it. They cannot in good conscience claim that that's anything other than a call for us to go to war with Russia.
Now, Senator, do you think, and this is just my analysis looking at it, but I'd love to hear your take, do you think that's why we just saw the news this morning coming out that Russia and potentially Belarus are going to be conducting nuclear drills either this week or coming up very soon? Do you believe that's in a response to all this chatter that we've heard from NATO? Because that's really the one wild card that they have left, a reminder of, as President Trump likes to say, whenever Putin gets pushed into a corner, he says the N-word, nuclear.
Right. Right. It is concerning. Look, I don't want to opine beyond my ability to speak with credibility here. There are a lot of complicated politics over there that I don't pretend to understand. But let me tell you this. Your question cuts to the heart of one of the things that has concerned me about this war from the very beginning, which is that Russia is a nuclear armed power. Russia has enough nuclear warheads to destroy the United States many times over, if it chose to do so. Now, I hope and pray that day never comes. I don't really want us to get close to that day. I don't want us to mess around here and there and find out whether it's going to happen. The closer we get to a conflict with Russia, the more we continue to fund with increasingly escalatory weapons, weapons that could be described as having offensive capabilities, the more we're tempting fate in that regard. And I think that needs to be taken into account, and it hasn't been taken into account. As we've debated sending all this money over to Ukraine on multiple iterations now, I've raised this warning. It's mostly met with crickets, and where it's not met with crickets and silence, it's met with people who reflexively just call me a Putin sympathizer. Look, I don't like Putin. He's a bad guy. I hope he loses. I look forward to the day when he's no longer in power. He did an evil thing by invading Ukraine, not just once, but twice. And I want him very much to lose. But
Senator, we're coming up on a quick break there, but I want to hold that moment because this is important. Look, even Ronald Reagan understood that you have to negotiate rather than go to nuclear war. It's very simple. And Senator Mike Lee is breaking it down for us. Stay tuned right after the break.
But I rolled with Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. We're speaking with Senator Mike Lee. He's warning us all about the danger of escalation with one of, or honestly, the largest nuclear power on the face of the earth. President Ronald Reagan understood that the way to peace in the Cold War was to keep it a Cold War and not get U.S. or NATO troops directly involved in entanglements with the Russian army. But of course, this is now shifting as NATO troops, we're told, more and more are going to be or potentially being looked at for going into Ukraine. This is something I warned about. I call it the Syrianization of Ukraine. We're told F-16s are now on their way. American tanks already, Abrams tanks, have been seen on the battlefield. There are reports of the French Foreign Legion fighting in the Donbass. Senator Mike Lee, walk us through what are the real dangers here that are being, and as you were explaining during the break a little bit, being completely overlooked by the collective West right now?
Yeah, Russia remains a nuclear power, and it remains a nuclear power that has a lot of warheads. And my view is that we've been cheated on in our nuclear arms treaties with Russia for decades, and that they probably have more warheads even than we think. But even just the ones that we know about that they acknowledge, they've got enough to blow us off the map many times over. Now, it doesn't mean we should never speak ill of Russia. It doesn't mean we should never, under any circumstance, push back on Russia. But the minute we get involved in a war with Russia, even a proxy war, and then the minute that proxy war becomes increasingly escalatory, we avoid sending certain weapon systems because they could be used offensively for a long time, then we start sending those same weapons, and then even more weapons with even more potential offensive uses. We're getting closer and closer to a hot conflict with a nuclear armed adversary. That's not something that we should treat lightly. And I feel like too many people in Washington are treating it lightly, and they shouldn't. We will do that to our own detriment if this continues.
And this is an issue because there's so much, you call it hubris, call it just being used to being hegemonic overstretch, whatever you want to call it, that in Washington, D.C., there doesn't seem to be much of a understanding or at least appreciation for this. I mean, I remember I'm not old enough to have gone through most of the Cold War, but I did go through at least one of, you know, the desk drills. You remember the desk drills in schools because the Russian bombs were about to. I never quite understood why it was that, you know, somehow going under your desk would protect you from a nuclear weapon. But, you know, hey, we all did it. And so how do you go from a generation of that who understands that these people have the ability to wipe us out completely to these crazy statements like the United States is going to effect regime change in Russia? And it seems like it's, and you know, that used to be decried as a conspiracy theory, but then you have people who are actually admitting it, that that's what they want is regime change in Russia. Because, I mean, hey, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, we tried it in 1917, and that went really well for everyone involved when the Tsar was taken out by by the Germans. Putting Lenin in and giving us the Bolsheviks, that was really great. You know, the USSR, that was just wonderful for so many millions of people that lived under Joseph Stalin. And so I guess there's this idea where people think that if they just have good intentions, that everything is going to work out. But unfortunately, we don't live in that world, do we?
No, we don't. And sadly, many of us who grew up during the Cold War and remember the euphoric feeling as we emerged from the Cold War as the victor, has led to a type of hubris that I consider most unfortunate. This feeling of invincibility is not something that we should embrace. It's something that we should be really concerned about. It causes us to overlook risk. It also causes us to overlook the real pressing need to find a way to achieve peace between Russia and Ukraine. Take, for example, Jack, remember at the outset of the war, right after Ukraine had been invaded by Russia this time around, we all know that neither the last invasion 10 years ago nor this invasion now that started 2 years ago, neither of them would have occurred in the absence of regional natural gas energy hegemony by Russia in Europe. At the outset of the war, Germany was still sending $1 billion a day, every single day, and this went on for months after the war started, sending it to Russia for natural gas. Just imagine if the United States had all along been sending large-scale quantities of natural gas into the European market. This war would never have happened. This war couldn't have happened. Vladimir Putin couldn't have assembled the political, the economic, or the military prowess to invade Ukraine. Not 10 years ago with Crimea, not this war that started 2 years ago. And yet we did nothing about that. Why? Well, perhaps because we were still dealing with this, we were still basking in this false sense of invincibility post-Cold War. We've really got to go after that, and we've got to cut that out. Otherwise, it's going to get us hurt.
Do you think at this point that the Russians would be even willing to make a gesture towards ceasefire or an armistice. We've seen some talks between, you know, sort of these broken talks between Hamas and Israel, but it really seems that the Russians at this point, early on, it seemed like they were going to, but lately, it's just not something that seems to be on anyone's radar.
Yeah, lately it's not, in part, I suspect, because they don't see any willing partner to negotiate with. And why would they? When they see the Ukrainians increasingly emboldened by all the weapons and all the other forms of relief that we're sending them, enough money to keep their career civil servants paid for about a year. I mean, those who are in power there are seeing no reason at all to pursue peace. So if they're not willing to do it, why would Russia want to do this? The other thing we frequently hear, Jack, is that don't worry, this is going to break Russia. This is going to break them. We're going to degrade the Russian defense capabilities. We're going to erode their defense production systems. They won't be able to keep up with it. Well, that appears not to be happening. What is happening is that we're depleting our own stockpiles of weapon systems that we need to defend our homeland, should, heaven forbid, something happen here. And those are going to Ukraine. Many of these, by the way, happen to be some of the same weapon systems that are needed in other parts of the world. People in Taiwan need some of the same weapons to try to deter Beijing from making a move on Taiwan. And yet a lot of these weapons are now backordered well into the 2030s. We cannot physically produce them fast enough. So look, there's a lot of delusional thinking behind this. Delusional thinking intermingled with euphoria that comes from a few people getting really, really rich and a few politicians getting a lot of praise by the Washington Post, the New York Times, and MSNBC.
Senator, we know you just have a couple of minutes left. What's your message to folks back home? What can they do? It's the number one question I get every day. They say, okay, we've heard about this. We understand there's corruption. We understand things aren't going right. But what can we actually do about it? How do we activate people on these issues?
Well, look, on this issue in particular, I continue to stand by what Republicans have said in the past, what Republicans started saying in, I don't know, October or November of last year, which is that if there are some of us who, for various reasons, are probably not going to want to spend more money in Ukraine. But for those of us who, those of my colleagues who do, we should all stay united as Republicans by saying not another dollar, not another dime, not another penny should go to Ukraine until, at a minimum, we have secured our border and we pass legislation that gets rid of Joe Biden's enormous discretion that he's abusing in order to facilitate this border invasion across our southern border, which, by the way, is enriching the international drug cartels to the tune of tens of billions of dollars every single year, while bringing in enough fentanyl to kill millions of Americans. This is not right.
No, I couldn't agree more. And it's clear to me that, you know, as people are in an election year that are looking at this, and when you look at the polls as well, it shows consistently that when people are not given a list, when pollster, and this was Gallup was even reporting this, that when they're not given a list of topics to choose, but are asked the question, what is your number one issue? It's not inflation and economy. That comes in at a close second. Number one across the board is actually immigration. And it's so strange to me that we can see those numbers, and then when we look at the actions of our government, it would seem like it doesn't even exist.
Right. But, Jack, remember, the American people are not dumb. And deep down, the American people understand intuitively that these things are connected. They don't operate in separate hemispheres. The cost of living is out of control. Life is unaffordable. The typical American family is shelling out like an additional $1,300 a month every single month just for the same things they have had to buy all along. $1,300 a month more expensive than they were the day Joe Biden took office. But intuitively, they understand that these things are connected. Government overspends on some things, fails to act on others. The combined effect of them results in the cost of living just becoming a thing of the past, a thing of the past in terms of affordability. The typical American family is not able to get ahead. It is barely getting by, if even they're doing that. And it's because of these really bad policies. At best, these policies are reckless. At worst, these policies are malicious and hateful. Either way, the American people have had enough of them, and the American people are ready for regime change. They're ready for the election of Donald J. Trump as the 47th president of the United States, and Republican majorities with real Republicans, not uniparty posers in both houses of Congress.
Senator, are you calling for regime change in the United States of America?
I'm calling for the type of regime change that can happen every 2 years and every 4 years in the case of the presidency. It's time to do that. Regime change happens Amen. In November when the American people vote for what they actually want, which is to be free and to live their lives free of excessive government interference.
Amen. God bless. Senator Mike Lee, go follow him on X, Based Mike Lee. I can confirm, folks, it's really him. It's really him over there. Go and give him a follow. Thank you, Senator. Honored to have you on.
And Jack, where is Jack? Where is Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Want to give a shout out to the especially spicy Rumble chat today. I'm being told that Rumble chat is just going off. What's up, guys? We see you. We see you in there. There's one guy who's going a little bit rough, but I see It's Me Again. Cy is rocking out. JFO2112 is doing really, really well as well. So what's up? Shout out to you guys in the chat. Folks, I like knowing exactly where my food comes from, and with Moink, that place is from small family farms all across the country. You get help to save the family farm and get access to the highest quality meat on earth when you join the Moink movement today. That's right, the Moink movement. Moink runs their business from a town of 97 people in Newark, Missouri, and they're helping save our tradition, our values, and helping save rural America with every order. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. You can choose the meat delivered in every box, like ribeyes, chicken breasts, pork chops, salmon fillets, and the best bacon. Look, I love this stuff. When we got back home, I was like, I need my Moink box right now. Where's my Moink box, woman? I was calling for it. I was banging on the door like Mike Pence trying to get into a Stormy Daniels courtroom. Support American farmers by signing up at moinkbox.com/poso right now, and the Human Events audience will get free bacon for a year. That's 1 year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but for a limited time only. Spelled moinkbox.com/poso. That's moinkbox.com/poso. You know, folks, when we look at what's going on in the world right now, we have to understand we have a president of the United States who's currently removed from the campaign trail, leading opposition candidate in the United States, removed from the campaign trail by state force. This is something that everyone in the country should be outraged about. If this were happening in the Third World or Eastern Europe, everybody would know exactly what it is, and everybody would call it what it is. But here we just kind of go back and scroll to the next thing. Well, someone who doesn't just sit back is Kenny Cody, and he's a columnist over at humanevents.com. He joins us now talking about the problem with Republican moderates. Kenny, what's going on, man?
Jack, how are you, brother? You doing good today?
I'm doing very well. Walk me through this, Kenny, because it's crazy that, look, I understand people want to be moderate. I understand people having center of the road politics. I can understand all those things. But what I can't understand is being in a situation like we are right now, where you got patriots like Peter Navarro who are currently behind bars, when you've got people like the praying grandma who's being sent to jail, where the leader of our party is sitting in a courtroom because of state force, and we've got people saying, oh, why can't we all just get along? Help me understand this.
Well, I understand, like, in some districts that it's controversial to take such, you know, right-wing positions on abortion, on foreign policy, and things like that. But when you're seeing blatant political weaponization by the federal departments, by state departments, I don't see how that's a moderation issue. Like, that calling out corrupt federal government is what conservatives are supposed to stand for. What are we conserving as conservatives, even moderate conservatives, if they're not calling out blatant judicial weaponization, if they're not calling out a president sitting in a courtroom being robbed of the opportunity to campaign against an incumbent Democratic president? It seems like Republicans are the only ones that are expected to be moderate in our country. Democrats are not expected to be moderate. Independents are not expected to be moderate. But for some reason, Republicans and the losers that the GOP continues to be are the ones that always cave to independents and Democrats pressuring them to be moderate for simply calling out that President Trump is being robbed of an opportunity to campaign against a Democratic incumbent president. He is being, in a courtroom in a sham trial, this Stormy Daniels nonsense that he is having to go through because Democrats are pressuring Republicans in. And the problem, like I discussed in my article for Human Events, Jack, is the moderates have impacts on solid red district Republicans. People like Tony Gonzalez are voting like they are living in this moderate or Democratic district when they are living in solid Republican districts. The moderates are having impacts on solid red district Republicans, and it's forcing our party to go to the middle, go into being centrist, and even going into being progressive simply because of moderates having impacts on solid red Republicans. And we are the ones that's expected to be weak. We are the ones that's expected to be moderate, and that cannot happen if we expect to take our country back and to get Donald Trump elected in November.
And it's really interesting, too, because when we're talking about moderation, as you just said, in terms of policies, in terms of electability, in terms of which issue set makes the most sense for a certain district, sure, everyone's for that. No one's against that. The issue, of course, is moderation in terms of action. And here's a problem that I see is that this weaponization committee that we've had with the Republican House majority under First Speaker McCarthy and now Speaker Johnson, what are they doing? What are they actually doing to take the fight to the Democrats? Kenny, what is it? Is there a constitutional problem with Republicans that they're just not willing to go down this road? Or is there something else? Are they like the Washington Generals going up against the Harlem Globetrotters every night, and they're essentially just paid to lose because they're a bunch of paid losers?
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, Jack, is I think that if I admire anything about the Democratic Party, anything about Democrats, is that they're willing to fight. The firebrands of the new GOP are the only ones that are willing to take the fight to the system, to the establishment. People like Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and others, Tim Burchett, are the only ones that are actually willing to go out on a limb and fight Democrats. And unfortunately, they are some of the most ostracized people in the House GOP and in the Senate GOP. The Democrats are willing to fight, and that's why Republicans lose. They always want to lose. Republicans always are blamed for losing on, they take too extremist positions or they take too far right-wing positions. No, it's because we're not willing to battle. We're not willing to stand up for what we actually believe. We're not willing to actually conserve what we're supposed to conserve as conservatives, being fiscally responsible, keeping us out of foreign war, keeping us out of spending unnecessary taxpayer money and sending it overseas or to corporations that hate us. We are not willing to do that for some reason. And I think that because of what you just said, that identity of them being losers is the same reason. It's what chases everybody away. But as we've seen in the candidacies of Nikki Haley in comparison to Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis in comparison to Donald Trump, the American people do not want moderation when it comes to appealing to the American electorate. They want fighters. They want everyday Americans to be prioritized in policy and in rhetoric. And people like Donald Trump, Matt Gaetz, and others are the only ones that can do that. Americans are so sick and tired of this manzy-pansy way of politics that Republicans continue to embrace. For some reason, they want to embrace modernization. They want to embrace centrism. They want to embrace moderation. And they want to embrace bipartisanship instead of actually going out and prioritizing everyday American positions, like prioritizing our jobs not going overseas, prioritizing mass deportation like most Americans in most states in this country prioritize. They are too scared of that because of the last 25 years of moderation in GOP politics. But in order to get a good speaker, in order to get a good majority leader in the Senate, in order to actually win races, Republicans have to want to conserve something. We are conservatives for a reason, but for some reason, we are just Democrats with an R label when it comes to the House GOP, to the Senate GOP, and oftentimes some governors and some state legislators across our country. If we want to win, we have to reject moderation when we can, and we have to reject centrism as a party as a whole. Like you said, it's okay in some districts to be electorally viable in some districts to like change positions on some policies and not vote for the most right-wing positions, but we cannot let the moderates and the centrists of our party to have impact and it to influence solid red Republicans. When we can afford to be as right-wing as we can, we need to be, and we need to conserve something and fight for something, just like Donald Trump is in the courtroom in New York.
And look, this is what it really comes down to. Do people have the stomach for the fight? And we just had Senator Leon here. That guy's got the stomach for the fight. And he's someone who understands intrinsically. And I hope that soon, by the way, that we're going to be getting another senator from the great state of Utah that will also be a fighter like that. Mayor Trent Staggs, who just won the, I believe it's the endorsement of the party, still got the nomination process to go through. But what can I say, Kennedy? Kenny, it's going to be really great to finally have two Republican senators from Utah. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back with more Kenny Cody, human events columnist, when we come back.
Hours. I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily. Got a question for you guys. You ever had a conversation with someone, and the next thing you know, you're getting ads for products that match exactly what you were just talking about? Well, between the government, big tech, corporate America, and criminals, your privacy is compromised 24/7. This is on top of the side effects from radiation that cell phone companies swear is totally safe in the brain-numbing social effects of social media. Detox from your phone today with Silent. Silent is a light and portable Faraday sleeve for your mobile device to protect your privacy, your security, and your health. Its patented Silent Pocket Faraday technology blocks harmful radiation and all wireless signals, giving you peace of mind that your personal data never ends up in the wrong hands. Go silent today at slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO and save 15% plus free shipping and qualifying orders. Look, folks, I'm in the spotlight. I'm challenging the government, the Klaus Schwabs, and big corporate interests is on top of the left. Got to protect my privacy at all times. That's why I'm so thankful that Silent was created. Go to slnt.com/poso. Again, that is slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. We're talking now with Kenny Cody, a columnist at humanevents.com. Kenny, here's my question for you. Can conservatives and Republicans look to President Trump right now in this moment where he is constantly under fire? And he had this great quote recently where they say, how do you take it all in stride? How do you do it? And he said, you know, I just don't care. I just don't care. I say things happen and that's just life and I don't care. Is that all it is? It's, by the way, that's great life advice out there for anybody who's getting caught up in something. Just don't care. Literally just don't care. Kenny Cody, what do we need to do to the Republican Party to get those types of leaders in place?
I think Republicans don't need to care about what the establishment thinks, and I think that's why Trump has succeeded from 2016 all the way to 2024. No presidential candidate in Republican history, no leader in Republican history has dominated the party as long as he has, as Donald Trump has. And I think that's pretty obvious. And I think if Republicans look to how he has refused to cave to the establishment, he's refused to cave to Democrats, he's refused to cave to independents once, if more Republicans would just do that, not care about the ramifications. I can understand caring about the ramifications from your constituents, as we talked about earlier, Jack, in districts that are toss-ups or districts that are Democratic. But in terms of living in solid Republican districts, don't worry about the ramifications from the military-industrial complex. Don't worry about the ramifications from your donors, from corporate influence, or the mainstream media. Try and embrace the hate. Republicans are always going to be demonized marginalized, we're always going to be looked at as the racist bigots that we are perceived to be by the Democrats and by leftists. But if Donald Trump has taken an approach to politics like every Republican should take the approach to politics, we are fighting evil. We are in a spiritual and moral battle with the progressive cultural Marxist left. If every Republican would just realize that, this isn't the mansy-pansy John McCain versus Barack Obama candidacy of 2008 or even in Republican pasts or in Democratic pasts. We are fighting against evil. We are fighting against unhumans, and more Republicans need to embrace it, just like Donald Trump has. It's the reason he uses the term deep state. It's not just Republicans or Democrats he is fighting. He is fighting the Uniparty. He is fighting the deep state establishment that hates him and really in their hearts hate all Republicans. That's why that the deep state, you know, tries to trigger Republicans to go towards the center, tries to make Republicans go towards the left and be moderates because they don't want threats. Moderates aren't a threat to the people that should be threatened. And if more Republicans would embrace that idea that we are fighting a war, we are not fighting just a, I disagree with this person, but I like them. That's not the attitude that we have to take towards politics anymore. They hate us just as much, or not if more, as we despise their policies, their personalities, and their morals. And if we are fighting these people, we need to embrace that we are not engaging in debate anymore. We're not engaging in argumentation or just simple coffee and talks as we have in the past. We are fighting a war against Democrats. We are fighting a war against neoconservatives. And we are fighting a war against the deep state establishment that hate us, that hate Donald Trump, and hate everything that MAGA and America First stands for. We have to embrace that. We have to be warriors and put on the armor and say we are willing to fight these battles for the American people, and we're willing to fight these battles for those who think like we do to change America for the better.
By the way, man, I got to say, I appreciate the Unhumans reference there. But it I love the fact that we got so much crap when that book title came out. When we said we're going to do Unhumans, we're going to name it that because we're going to describe the people that we're actually up against. And we got so much crap from, like, the libertarians and the moderate crowd. Oh, that book title is too mean. It's, you can't say mean things. You can't do that. How dare you? It's not allowed. You're not allowed to have a book called Unhumans. And then we do it, and then suddenly all of these, like, dysgenic freaks start popping up all over college campuses, and we kind of sit there and we go, So are you sure that we don't have a word for them? Because, you know, it seems to me like, I don't know if there were a word we could use to describe them, that maybe unhuman would be a good word. But that it's so true what you're saying. It's the constant concern trolling. It's the tone policing that goes on the right that you never see happen on the left. The left is over there. I think at GWU, they were calling for, like, to be bringing up the guillotine and setting it up for members of the administration and members of the faculty. And everyone was fine with that. And they were like, oh, yeah, no, that's fine. They're just speaking their truth. Last minute, Kenny Cody.
Well, that's what I agree with, Jack. I mean, I think we have to embrace who we're fighting. We have to, and not only do we have to be sure about what we're fighting for. We're fighting for fiscal conservatism. We're fighting for anti-interventionist foreign policy. We're fighting against the establishment. We're fighting against the deep state. But we have to also have to be willing to give those identifiers to the left that we're fighting. They are evil. They are unhuman. And even Democrats and the moderate owl are still calling us authoritarian, bigot, racists. I mean, they are not held to the same standard as we are. And we have to realize that we don't have to play the same games as Republicans have played for the last 20 years. They're demonizing us. It's time to demonize them. Realize what we're fighting and be willing to fight for America First, for Donald Trump, for Trumpism, for populism, and for nationalism. Embrace patriotism and be willing to fight the very unhumans that we are fighting in our current culture.
It's as simple as that. Kenny, where can we follow you, man?
At KD Cody TN on X and on Truth Social. You can find all my article archives at muckrack.com for all 115 articles that I've written. Jack, appreciate you having me on, man.
All right, check him out. Kenny Cody, human events columnist. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore.
The truth what really went down, so I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-order in line. Wait to get my